In July of this past year, my daughter embarked on a focused, relentless campaign of coercion. It sounds bad, but it wasn't, and I have her permission to tell this story. She wanted a dog. We had had a dog for many years, but 3 years ago we had to make that fateful decision and let him move on to the next phase of existence. And so we had been dogless for a while. Now, I sometimes can complain that my children lack focus and a certain stick-to-itiveness. She proved me wrong this time. She started downloading cute photos of dogs. She showed me funny videos of dogs. She pointed out dogs when we were out and about. She told me how she would take care of a dog and how a dog would be good for her. So cuddly, so calming. It would teach her to be more responsible, she said. She even talked to me about Queen Elizabeth and her corgis. As it turned out, she had a 5-point plan to get a dog. To quote her, here is what the 5-point plan was. Cry at pictures of little corgi and pug puppies while we were driving in the car. Create a slideshow and present it on her birthday. Be more responsible. If that didn't work, she was going to start slipping pictures of adorable dogs under pillows, in books, on doorknobs, anywhere. And 5, she would threaten to get a cat. But not the cute kind. I quote her, the mean kind that hates humans and smashes plates. And she did do a PowerPoint presentation on her birthday. She researched dog breeds and found out the ones that would fit well with our family. She researched how dogs positively impact mental health. It was a good 10 minutes of focused, relentless coercion. She started trolling the local dog shelter sites, looking for photos of dogs. Poor, poor dogs that needed a home. We said we would take it under advisement. Truth be told, it wasn't a hard sell, for me at least. I missed our dog, and the idea of having a warm and loving companion again was attractive. But there were other considerations. My husband and I are about this close to having an empty nest. And after 34 years of raising children, that is something to be considered. The ability to travel without worrying about who is caring for the dog and all the arrangements that go with that. But finally, one day she texted her father and I a photo of a cute Wheaton Terrier who was at the SPCA. And I texted him back. This is really a cute dog. That photo is on the front of your order of service, and I can tell you it's even cuter in color. And so that is how it came to be that on the day of October 22nd, 2016, we found ourselves going to the SPCA to get this dog. There were many dogs to look at. We walked up and down the kennels. They all wanted to go home with us. But there was Buckwheat, this soft-haired Wheaton Terrier. We asked to meet him. They brought him into a room with us. He was friendly, and he had these big, lovable eyes that were so hard to resist. And he had a story. It was a hard story. He had had a hard life. He is 9, and he belonged to a breeder who ended up mistreating him badly. The trainer at the SPCA said that Bucky had been put through his paces and he seemed to be a pretty even-tempered dog. And so we thought it seemed like a good fit. And that is how we came to have Bucky, short for Buckwheat, as part of our life. Our last dog was a beagle, and this dog is a terrier. Let's say there's been a learning curve. But you know, this sermon really is not about our dog or dogs. It's really about what I have learned along the way. Perhaps the SPCA was doing a bit of a soft sell, and perhaps they didn't know all the details. But not long after Bucky came to our house, it became apparent that his hard life had been harder than maybe even the SPCA had known. Getting a rescue dog is a good thing. An animal, a life is saved, and that is good. And not many people are willing to adopt a 9-year-old dog. But getting a rescue dog is also taking a dog who comes along with his or her own baggage. We tried putting Bucky in a crate at night because other dogs we had had found crates to be calming. You know, it's a small, enclosed, defined space. Not our Bucky. We had to learn that because of some of the abuse involved a crate, he could not tolerate the crate. We wanted to give him a home base that he felt safe in, but whoops, we totally miscalled that one. So next went up the baby gates, and now our laundry room is his safe place. He is a dog that has been traumatized. He lives with PTSD, clearly. He's getting better, but it's a process. When we first had him, he still had some behaviors that were clearly from being abandoned to his crate. He would start turning circles, tight circles, and then he couldn't stop. Or he would start to scratch something and just wouldn't stop. I would have to yell his name to startle him out of this perseveration. And he doesn't really play. By that I mean he doesn't know how to retrieve a ball. I'm hoping maybe I can teach him that later in the spring. He's kind of an all-on or all-off dog. He seems to either be napping or just all over you. And he loves to lick my face. Not my favorite. Maybe your thing, just not my thing. And he really doesn't like men. Blessings to my husband, who was the least enthusiastic about getting this dog. Bucky has snarled at him a couple of times early on, and often will simply skitter out of the way and hide under the kitchen table when he comes into the kitchen. Also, I cannot vacuum when he is in the house, or there will be a huge mess to clean up. We are learning that he is skittish. We've all taken to saying routinely as we are getting out of a chair, "It's okay, Bucky, I'm just getting up." He gets up. Every time somebody gets up, he gets up, has to figure out what's going on. He is my daughter's dog. He loves her, but I am his alpha dog. He bows to me when I come down in the morning. He always knows where I am and pretty much follows me everywhere. For those of you who have ever been parents of toddlers, I now find myself hiding behind doors just to get a little peace and quiet. But I also found out something really important. Because I'm his alpha dog, he listens to me. And it has taken me a while to understand the power that comes with that. For a while, he was barking at 4 a.m. I think he just wanted to let us know that he was around and was lonely. He sleeps downstairs, we sleep upstairs. We have painted stairs. He's not good on stairs. I think if he tried to go upstairs, he doesn't even try to go upstairs. I mean, I think he looks at them and goes, nope, not going there. But the first few times he did this barking, I lay in bed wondering, should I go down? Does he need attention? Does he need to go out? Does he need food? One morning, I didn't feel like feeding him. I didn't feel like taking him out at 4:30 a.m. I was really tired. I went down and I firmly, a little loudly, but not too loudly, said, "Stop," and then just left the room. There were a couple more mornings of that, and then he stopped. I realized that if I spoke firmly to him when he got into those spinning circles, I could get him to stop. I also learned that there's a difference between speaking firmly and yelling. One day I yelled at one of the kids, and he does not like me yelling. He ran off and hid, and it took a bit of coaxing to get him to trust me again. So I learned, firm is okay, yelling is not. He's learning to trust us. He's learning that we mean well, and we are learning about him and what he needs. And I am learning patience, a lot of patience. This will not be a quick fix. 6 months at least, I'm told, and maybe even 2 years. And part of the brokenness that is part of Bucky may always be there. It is not just patience I have learned with this dog. It's been an interesting process to get such a reactive dog when the world around me seems so reactive. When every day I open the news and hear another story that makes me want to yell, when much of what I hear makes me angry, really angry, when what I hear makes me want to scream and shout all the time. And so many people around me are twitchy and scared and reactionary. There was a moment with this dog when he had pooed in the house yet one more time. A moment when I wanted to yell at him because, gross, back. And yet, I did not. I was able, even at that early hour in the morning, to think, well, he's only a dog, and he doesn't know better. He's anxious, and we're not really sure what he's been through. And then I wondered, why do I have such a hard time with people? Why do I struggle so hard to see how they might also be hurt and healing? So here are my suggestions for dealing with traumatized dogs. Might help with people too. First, I need to distinguish between the dogs that are truly dangerous and the ones who are traumatized but can heal. All dogs need love. Traumatized dogs need more. All dogs need firm boundaries. Traumatized dogs, even more so. Yelling at a dog doesn't teach it to not do the thing. It only teaches the dog that I am the enemy. Food helps a lot. Dogs learn more from praise than criticism. Praise the dog when I want him to do something. Withdraw my attention when there is behavior I do not want. The dog has known trauma. That's his vision. It's my responsibility to offer him a different vision, one where people love him. These are troubled times in our country. There are a lot of upset people. And I need to remind myself something over and over and over again. People don't have a change of heart because they've changed their minds. They change their minds because they've had a change of heart. Let me say that again. People don't have a change of heart because they've changed their minds. They change their minds because they have a change of heart. If I had not learned that before, I certainly have learned that from my dog. I am called, and I think all of us are called, to live out our faith, our UU values. But we have a belief as UUs that if we only explain our rational, well-thought-out argument well enough, surely our opponent will come to understand. And friends, that is not how we will affect change at this point in history. My UU values are calling me to take action in an intentional, thoughtful way. This week, the Senate voted a beginning to repeal the parts of the Affordable Care Act. People I love and care about could be at risk of losing their health insurance. This is an important issue. I could just yell at everyone who voted for this agenda, but there is a better way. If I am going to get angry, let me focus that anger. Let me be angry with my elected officials. That's their job to hear that. Let me not fall in line with what is happening. Let me have my voice and use it for the common good by repeatedly contacting elected officials, by signing petitions, by participating in gatherings and demonstrations that are protected by our First Amendment. I have a voice. Let me use it. But when I meet someone who I believe is wrong-headed in their political or social or theological or economic views, let me not yell at them. Let me, for the love of all that is sacred, not liberal, splain at them. Let me listen to them, and after I have listened to them, let me instead speak from my heart. Let me be vulnerable enough to show them what I am feeling about at these very important issues. Let me listen to their pain. I do not have to agree with someone to listen to their pain. Instead, let me offer them a vision that is grounded in love. The piece I read, And How Is It With the Children, does not actually factually represent the Maasai greeting ritual. The question, how is it with the children, is part of the ritual, as are other questions. But the truth of what McNeil wrote is still true. If we meet each other and ask, how is it with the children? How is it with the aged? How is it with those who are ill? How is it with the most marginalized? It would reframe our conversations from who is winning to how are we caring for ourselves and for others. That is where we need to begin. In a world